ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike, welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
And I'm John Lobster. 10 years ago, director J.J. Abrams brought Star Trek back to the big screen in grand fashion with a young cast and a surprising link to the original series. 2009 Star Trek proved to be a summer blockbuster and the highest-grossing Trek film to date. It also proved to be Abrams' audition reel for a gig directing Star Wars, which he always professed was his first love. But a decade later, as J.J. wraps up his Star Wars run with The Rise of Skywalker, has the intervening time dimmed the shine of Star Trek's lens flare? Or can we still detect a hint of that brand new starship smell? Gentlemen, 10 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, time goes fast.
Time goes real fast.
I can remember taking my mom's boyfriend, because he was a fan of the original series as a kid. And this is like as a young person, and this is the first movie that he that showed interest in going to see with me. And I can remember taking him and like the joy that he had even with this reboot, side boot, timeline thing. And yeah,
I do like a little bit of side boot, if you know what I mean.
I like side boot, but
we can all appreciate side boots. this was a big risk to me, honestly, because they've had Star Trek for a long time. Paramount has long, you know, been churning out Star Trek movies along with the original series and The Next Generation. They had done, you know, a good bit of TV up till now. I think this was 2009 and Enterprise went off the air in 2005.
Yeah.
So it had been for 4 years or so without any Trek in the world. And now I know that doesn't seem like a long time given it's now been 4 or 5 years between movies, but that was a big deal then, right?
Star
Trek felt dead.
Yeah, but the reason why it was a big deal and why that movie exists is because the studio signed a bunch of deals, licensing deal for action figure whatnot, bunch of stuff. And then they stopped producing the show after, what was it, 4 season, 5 season Enterprise?
Yeah.
And they did nothing.
4 years, yeah.
They did nothing. Yeah. So after 2 years, all the people that paid for these franchises were like, for these merchandise were like, you were supposed to do this, do that, do that, and that was all in our contract. So they went to court and they won. So they had to release a movie in 2009. They had no choice. That was either, and the way the rights work, when Paramount split with CBS,
right?
CBS has a right to everything TV show, and Paramount has the right to the movies. So they had also to reboot a lot because they could not use the same set and all that bullshit because of that thing. So getting J.J. Abrams, you always get him to put some duct tape on your license and see where it goes. Well,
he had just done Mission Impossible 3. He had just had a very successful start to Lost.
Yep.
And he was kind of the it guy of the moment. And this was an attempt to reboot a franchise, update it for a modern audience, but still in what I thought was a kind of brilliant stroke of the film, acknowledge that history and audience, but say, we're going to do...
And right, that shit did happen still,
right,
in a different universe,
right, in
or
another
timeline,
lifetime, that right. was all real, and, yep. you know, everything's different now, but it's still the same stuff.
Is it me, or that's very ultimate...
Ultimate
Universe Marvel.
Yeah, it's very comic book, to be honest. It's very Into the Spider-Verse, if you will. Or Avengers Endgame, maybe. We'll find out.
Oh, shit. J.J. Abrams going to reboot Superman. Superman, isn't he?
Well, he had done...
Damn it.
He had written Superman Flyby, right? Like, he had done a script of Superman at one
point. Have you read that piece of trash?
I have not read it, but I know that it exists. God. So, I mean, he may not have been the only person to dabble in that, but I think what's...
Is it...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It just popped into my brain. Tourette's. Is it me or... Did someone come and steal my copy and replace it with one that has even more lens flare than before?
There's a bit.
Nope.
There's a bit. And if you've watched Star Trek Discovery, it sticks around. Like, Star Trek Discovery, they find new uses for the lens flare every episode. And I gotta say, in terms of updating the visual style of Star Trek, it works. So
it does work. It just, there's so, like... I defended it the first time, a handful of times I've seen this movie because I own it, and I haven't watched it in probably 7 years, right? And I was like, ah, oh, there's not that much lens flare. It's not as bad. Stop it. You guys are all just exaggerating it. And I watched it again over the weekend, and I was like, Jesus, it's worse than I remember.
It's a bit. But the thing for me, though, is what this movie does and what Discovery continues to do in much the same visual sense is they make Star Trek look cool. Star Trek has
great.
Like, Star Trek has always had cool sets and cool starship designs and things like that. But 9 times out of 10, it's a static shot of a ship floating there in space. The camera doesn't really move and pan around the ship and show you different angles and different stuff that's going on.
The first battle when the Kelvin was getting taken apart, beautifully horrific.
Yeah. And there are money shots of the ship in this film that rival anything that's been done before. And, you know, Star Trek has always kind of, you know, done that money shot. You get the reveal of the ship. You get the grand vista. You get the
uncloaking.
The orchestra swells.
For half an hour.
The theme goes dun, 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 dun. And you go, wow. And you just kind of drool and you're... you know, your trousers go on red alert, etc. But this, like, really plays that well, but also does really cool things with the way the starship looks and the interior sets where they film in, like, a factory or in a brewery, and you have all the tanks and everything. Like, it makes everything feel so industrial, but also, like, so sleek and space age, and I don't know. It's almost more analog than anything the Next Generation did.
Yes, because it gives it a realness instead of everything being molded in plastic somewhere in a TV shop. And they were bringing that aesthetic back to every movie to keep it in, like, in continuity, I guess, or
yeah,
some
I think
bullshit.
In Beyond, they went to, like, a large laser collider or something and film that as, like, the heart of the ship, the engine.
Yeah, makes it real, makes it palpable, and you also believe that this bullshit is doing something because, well, it's actually doing
right, it
something.
It is doing something.
So, hey, that works. And the fact that they were 10 years later and that TV caught up and were able to get,
right.
Like, what was it, 13 episodes this
yeah.
season? With amazing 14. Fucking Star Trek.
Star Trek
and
Discovery.
Oh, yeah, it's so good. I know I've been, like, called online not a Star Trek fan because I love it and blah, blah, blah. I don't fucking care. I love watching this show.
Okay, that is so fucking dumb from the trolls out there.
I know.
You're not a Star Trek fan because you love this new iteration of Star Trek. How does that equal not, like...
I don't know, but I found that they found a way to mix what's best in the movie that we're going to talk about and... bring the hard sci-fi that Star Trek always
right.
used to do. And they put that in a nice milkshake. I will say the only episode I didn't like were, I think, the last two, because it was a bunch of space battle, which I was like, wow, on a big screen, that would be amazing. Right. But right now, I want this story to conclude. Yeah. But technology caught up where you have a space battle on Sunday night, a Thursday night on TV for an hour.
What this movie does also is it makes such brilliant use of pacing and character development, where it's introducing you to characters that are familiar, and it can kind of use this shorthand. Like, it doesn't really have to tell you who Sulu is. It doesn't have to tell you who Chekhov and Scotty are. There are moments that surprise you, and each character gets a moment where you realize that it's the same character you're familiar with, but there's a twist, right? But it's not an unexpected twist, in a way. Uhura, especially, Zoe Saldana, is introduced early on. She's one of the first of the original series crew members that you meet outside of Kirk and Spock. And, you know, she's the Uhura that you're familiar with. She's confident. She's competent. She's also Spock's love interest. And that comes as something that's unexpected, right? Like, you go, oh, well, that's a twist that we're not used to. And they do the same thing with Sulu, although you kind of know, like, if you've watched any of the original series, you know that Sulu was a fencer, right? Like,
you know where it's going.
You know what that is, but they do it in, you know, he has the cool unfolding sword and stuff like that. Chekhov is the whiz kid. Scotty
Bones is afraid of everything.
Yeah, Bones is not into space travel and kind of a curmudgeon.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor.
But I'll be honest, I think Carl Urban makes this work. Because he's the only one that copies what DeForest Kelly does, as everybody else is doing another spin. So having him interacting with all of the others makes it like more real us a little bit.
Even for someone who wasn't a huge fan, like I knew of the original Star Trek. I'd seen a couple episodes. I'd watched some of the later iterations more than the original, but they are in such popular culture and in such, I don't know, like the just the knowledge, right? The ether, right? So I knew all of these people's quirks, even though I'd only seen a couple shows and maybe a couple of the movies in my life. So you knew what Spock was supposed to be like.
Right.
You knew, and they it all of do, these people.
It can do a shorthand, and so it doesn't have to give time for character backstory and development. It can just introduce these characters, you know who they are, and boom, plot, 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 action, action, action. You know, let's get on to the next thing.
Winona Ryder boob shelf.
Right. And then it can do almost this situational humor and interaction where, you know, you just have these awesome characters that you know and you love and put them in this new situation and see what happens. And like Scotty says, I like this ship. It's exciting, you know? Like, he's the audience at that moment. Like, the captain and first officer are fighting on the deck of the bridge, and he's like, oh, this is fun.
But that's one of the things that's well written in this, is that mid-movie, they're bringing these point of view character where they're able to react like the audience at these new relationship, if you want. And so it's interesting to see, but the rest of the structure is a Star Wars movie.
It absolutely is.
The pre-credit scene that's basically the scroll, and then you have a generational story. You make sure that you have a little bit of the Beasties, a little bit that
you have a ship that can blow up a planet. You have you know, the loss of a parent figure, the connection with a mentor from the past who's also
the bad guys that aren't really necessarily bad guys. They're just misunderstood in their pain.
We're just simple mining folk.
Oh, have to sit there for 25 years, fix your ship, and just wait.
Yep. Eric,
it's a good
thing. That's the dumb part.
It's a good thing to pick the species that's ages slow.
Eric Bana kind of kills it in this role because he has just enough of the kook that he can play Nero with a straight face, but also make him seem really batshit crazy.
Menacing. Yeah. Menacing.
Yeah, agreed. The problem with Nero, again, is that when you start looking too close, all this bullshit makes no sense. But all Star Trek movies tend to cast, like, Idris Elba or, you know, these great actors, and then they put them under a ton of makeup and cut all their scenes in the editing room, and then you get these bland villains.
Yeah, I would say that the reboot Star Trek, although they have cast some really great actors, Benedict Cumberbatch, Idris Elba, they've been very villain-centric. Like, each story is driven by an antagonist rather than doing kind of the traditional story of Star Trek making some sort of discovery and having an allegory. But then again, Star Trek movies always do that. It's the TV show, the episodic TV show, that does the kind of social commentary episodes
of the week.
Hey, we met God in one of the movies.
We did. Why would he need a starship?
We also met fucking whales. Mm-hmm. Let's stop it.
I think we're due for that Star Trek movie.
We really are, yeah.
We're due for the Star Trek movie that cost around $12 million, shut on the corner of the street, making fun of the nuclear whistle.
They just need the cast, who have all become megastars, to take that deal. Even the guy that they kill off in the first scene of the movie is Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, they got him like really cheap,
early.
It's crazy, but at this point, I think you can't get that guy. You need a lot of money to get that guy. I can't wait to see what he's going to do to Men in Black.
That's going to be so awesome to see him and, oh my God, why
Amazing
did I blank
girl,
on
yes.
her name? I love her. Miss Thompson. Yes, it's going to be so great.
Tessa Thompson.
God, Tessa Thompson is one of the most amazing artists out there right now. I just love everything she does.
All right, let's get some more thoughts on this movie.
So I think the cool thing about this movie is the plot is also the conceit of setting up the way the reboot functions. So you have a time travel element where Spock and Nero have gone back in time accidentally, and by them going back in time, that has triggered this alternate timeline where things are now unfolding at a different pace than they would have before. Things look more advanced than they did on the original series because a starship from the 25th century traveled back and was scanned, and they got all these ideas for new technology, and that has put things on a different pace. But there's also familiar stuff, like we hear about Admiral Archer, and we learn about the Kobayashi Maru, and these characters who we would have met anyway are just in the same place they would have gotten, but earlier, because we're working with a younger cast, right? So Captain Pike is the first captain of the Enterprise, leading them out on their maiden voyage, but also his crew is made up of these other characters who we would meet later on. Now, Captain Pike also shows up on season 2 of Star Trek Discovery in a really cool way, played by another actor who really is awesome.
Kills it.
Really is awesome in the role. So I have, that no matter where Pike is, he's always great. Because even if you go back to Jeffrey Hunter in the original pilot for Star Trek, like, he's cool, right?
The cage,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm listening to you, and I think I just have an epiphany on what I love and hate of J.J. Abrams. At the same time, it's like the guy seems to be a fan like you and me, but when they put these ideas like to execution, they're just like, oh, that would be great to do our spin on this, and that would be great to do our spin on that, and that would be great to do our spin on this. Instead of writing a movie and then be like, oh, we have that part here that could be this. Let's just adapt it so like it works and it's fun, but it still has the same function in our movie and doesn't derail us. He did the same thing mostly with Star Wars. When you think about this Star Wars, I love The Force Awakens, but one of the criticisms is that it was a remake of A New Hope.
Well,
and that was a new spin on the same thing.
So is this kind of, right?
And so is the next one. Oh,
The next one definitely rips off The Wrath of Khan, spoilers. But I think what's so fun about this movie in particular is it is playing with your expectations of what Star Trek should be, and then it goes and it blows up Vulcan, right? Like it says, well, you know, this is a different thing. Like we're doing different things. The Vulcans are now an endangered species. Earth may be destroyed, and we have made that threat credible. You know, I know we always threaten to blow up Earth in the Star Trek movies, but this time the guy could actually do it because he just blew up Vulcan, and they're way more advanced. And here we go. And I love the ticking clock of this. I love the way that it throws the characters together, pulls them apart, puts them at odds to each other. Remember Gene Roddenberry's famous rule: no one should fight on the Enterprise, right? No one should get in a fight because it's the future. We've moved past that. We've evolved. And here you have Kirk and Spock in a literal fist fight on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Well, he's screaming at him, "You never loved your mother!"
Yep.
Yeah, seriously, they took Gene Roddenberry, and you know what, that cliff at the start?
They threw him off.
He was the Corvette.
They threw him off with the Corvette, and they were like, thank you very much for all the good ideas, but we have a franchise here, so we need to make money. Ciao. Gene Roddenberry would scream at these movies.
I'm absolutely sure that he would, but this made a ton of money. It is still the highest grossing Star Trek movie ever made. Second place, anyone want to take a guess?
Discovered Country?
I believe it is the one with the whales, but
That would make sense. Yeah.
The other two reboot ones, you know, did well also. But again, like, I just go back to the idea that this really, it really resets the expectation for Star Trek. I have my criticisms of Into Darkness, just because it retreads a lot of stuff, but it's also a fun movie in its own right, and I love Star Trek Beyond for just doing something completely different and doing more of a traditional Star Trek story. Like Star Trek III, it blows up the Enterprise, but takes the characters in an interesting direction.
What I'm going to say is that I'm happy that we add one of these, as you said, like classic mission with that crew, because at the point where we are, they sign everybody and build that franchise thinking they had the next Star Wars or MCU whatever. They were thinking like, okay, $500 million by movies. No, these movies make $325 million, which is a bunch of money, but it's not. If you put $100 million to just market the thing, and then you have to put $150 million to make the thing, it's $250 million. You're not profitable anymore.
Right.
And they sign all those contracts with these actors, thinking, "Oh, this is gonna be great." So right now, when they're just like, "Okay, we're doing the next one," and they're like, "Okay, you're gonna honor our contract." No. To have a chance to be profitable, you need to take X pay cut. So I think we're done with that crew.
Yeah, it's too bad because I mean, other than the tragic death of Anton Yelchin, who played Chekhov, I would love to see everyone here back together. And I thought through the three movies that they did, everyone had fantastic chemistry and, you know, really, really great, especially Chris Pine. I think this really made him a movie star. And of course, he's gone on to do Wonder Woman and some other huge roles. Zachary Quinto as well, I think, as Spock. He had just come off playing Siler on Heroes. But what a great casting as Spock.
It didn't feel right, but once you saw him, you're like, okay.
Yeah, but now that we had him to, like, kind of change things, when they got me another guy in Discovery, I was okay with it. And then, again, I know I look like I'm just, like, glorifying Discovery. This show is fucking amazing. And the guy that plays Spock just owned the role, and now I'm at the third iteration of this.
And he had a beard.
And he had a beard. But even when they shaved him at the end, just for like that little ear, what it could look like, I was like, no problem. And I really, really, really think that they used Discovery as a backdoor test to know, see if people would be ready to see a recast Enterprise and if they could remodel it.
Yeah.
And the Enterprise looked amazing in that show, and it looked like
It had to be something like 33% different. Like, there was some rule about it. You know, it had to be a certain percent different. Now, the Enterprise in Star Trek, the movie that we're talking about, is radically, but not radically different.
It is. They couldn't refer too much to the other. Again, one of these percentage bullshit. And it's all rights. No, it's not because the artists are like, oh, no, we want to be 33% different. No, it's all rights.
Trademark. Right. But they also do a cool thing where, I don't know if you guys can hear that car alarm going off at my neighbor's house.
Yes, I can.
Sorry about that. There we go. They do a cool thing where it is a different looking ship. The saucer section is mostly the same, but the nacelles are quite different. This one has ample nacelles, as you might say. And my warp core just went to my dilithium crystals are standing at attention. But the cool thing they do is they shoot it at the angles you're familiar with. The first reveal shot is a very comfortable angle. There's some shots later in the film where you're like, okay, that's the Enterprise. It's the silhouette is unmistakable.
But it's funny and weird at the same time how they took a 60s design and gave it kind of a 50s spin.
Yeah.
It looks like a 50s Corvette. Right. A little bit, and it doesn't look like a car, but it has the same
got the flared
shape.
Flared fenders for sure.
Yeah, then that was fun. I prefer the one we got this year, but that was fun.
Another thing I think really cool, Michael Giacchino's score that plays off of the themes through the original series, but makes its own thing. And they give you all the themes in that opening pre-credit scene, and you just hum them along the rest of the movie, which is so fun.
Yeah, it's a pretty good score.
And then closing on the, you know, original series, Space, The Final Frontier, These Are the Voyages, and then you get the kind of remixed version of the original series theme. That made me stand up and cheer in the theater, I remember.
And in his pants.
And I stood up and cheered in my pants.
I have to say that I'm missing a little bit These Are the Voyages, which, what I mean by that, the concept of, we're sending that ship for 5 years.
We're going out there. And we're going out there. Every week is a different thing. But those...
Yeah, and we're not really expecting for this shit to come back.
No, and... This is...
We got a lot of red-shirted people.
It's not the type of story that we tell anymore. We don't, by and large, tell that episodic story anymore. It's all about season arcs. It's all about serialized storytelling. Shows have to give this overarching theme. Now, one cool thing that Star Trek Discovery has done is each season reinvents itself, and each season is a different thing, and, spoilers, a different captain.
Which is
kind of cool. I have to, like, yeah, I have to say that that's kind of a cool way to approach a show where the soul of the show is the captain, right? Star Trek has always been driven by the captain, but it's the crew that makes everything work together. But if you switch out the captain, you give each season its own flavor. And that's something that they've done really, really well. Spoilers, the captain in season one was somebody that you didn't trust, which it turned out there was a good reason why you didn't trust him. The captain in season two is, I would argue, one of the greatest captains of all Star Trek.
I agree. But it was somebody that you trust right away because he had history, and they keep saying that they're in continuity, yes. So I know exactly how that guy's going to
finish. You know that Pike is a good guy because he's Pike. No matter what, he makes a sacrifice play.
Exactly. So this guy is... So I could trust him right away. And I think the best idea they had is that, first of all, you're talking about the captain. Sure, but this time the captain is not the focus of the show either. Right, it never is, yeah. And they took Spock and Kirk and mixed them up, put them in a woman, and that's your main character. And she's just amazing.
Yeah, Michael Burnham. And
Michael Burnham is one of the fun characters to follow, and the fact that she's not the captain, I think, gives a new spin to something we've seen for, how many seasons at this point? 34 or some shit?
But it's always she's always someone that you could see as the captain, which is always fun. Like you're like, oh, she would make a great captain. It's just
you think she's way too emotional, way too Kirk-like,
or is she way too logical, way too Spock-like?
Oh, when you mix these two, that's weird. That's why you need your bones. Yeah,
that's why you need bones. That's why we have Tilly.
That's true. Oh, God, I love Tilly.
Okay. So, again, like, we could go on and on. I will say that if you look at this movie and its use of Leonard Nimoy as a character that grounds it in something that you know, and then you look to the way that Abrams and the new Star Wars films use Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, Billy Dee Williams, and the other original trilogy cast members that show up. Like, this is how you do it, right?
Yeah, I agree. You use them as a vessel to introduce the other character. And as I said, one of the best things that they did is that they broke that, oh my God, who can replace William Shatner? Well, anyone?
I really think like the most emotional moment in this film is when Spock has just ejected Kirk from the ship for mutiny, and then he meets the old Spock, and he's like, "How do you know my name?" And he says, "I have been and always shall be your friend." And I lose it in the theater, kind of at that moment. Because it's true, right? Like, they're giving you these characters who are diametrically opposed, and the movie is telling you it's taking a narrative shortcut, but saying, you guys are going to be best friends, just watch.
Well, it's like me and Beef, we ate each other, but we're best friends, you know?
It's because I'm here to be your bones.
There you go.
Well, can we pick a different person for you to be? Because that's just weird when you say it like that.
I'll be your Scotty, because I'm always drunk.
Yeah, we don't want your wife to take your bone, only leave you with your bones.
Only left me with my bones. All I got left is my bones. I've got aviophobia. It's a fear of dying or something. Okay.
We rate this thing?
Oh, I forgot to do my thing.
You did.
Yeah, there's a Pikachu thing there.
Yes, we deleted it. You'll have to hit F5.
Oh.
Okay. Fix that.
Any last things before we rate this puppy?
No, I think we're ready.
Live long and prosper and rate this movie. Wing, for Star Trek, the 2009 reboot, are you going legendary?
I dare you to do better.
Legend of its time.
It walks the talk and socks the Spock.
Cult legend.
Admiral Archer's prize beagle, whose name was? Anyone?
I don't remember.
Porthos.
I know he took it to shit on planet, and I was like, yes.
His name is Porthos.
Awesome.
Big Narada Boom.
Entertaining.
Pike's Peak.
Mabel.
Nero Miss.
Forgettable.
Boldly Going Nowhere.
Abysmal.
The Giant Sucking Black Hole Where Vulcan Used to Be.
Spring Breakers D&D.
Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
It's not that bad.
With the side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With the side of numpung?
Numpung.
I got numpung. Oh, you got numpung? I love it. I love that comedy. Will you knock it off?
Ow, god damn
it. I'm going to give this a solid awesome. That's always fun. Don't watch it too often. Watch it once every 2-3 years. It should be fine. It's always fun. It's one of these movies where you can watch and rewatch, and it's built in a way where there's action beat and moments beat enough, and the, as we said, the time clock is working, so it goes fast and it's fun to watch. So I'm giving this a solid awesome. Beef.
You know, there's times I completely disagree with you and times I agree with you. Awesome. Big Narada Boom. With a skill with a side of nuntung. Don't watch it more than every 2 or 3 years. Don't watch all of it, and you know, it's a lot of fun. It granted, there's stuff that the story is it's not a very deep story, but and it does rely heavily on you kind of knowing a beat about these people for some of the inside jokes and stuff like that. But it's still super entertaining. It's super awesome, I should say. It is something fun to throw on in the background. I'm glad it is one of the handful of movies I still own on disc, so when they stop letting me use stuff, I'll have it.
One of the first Blu-rays I bought, I believe.
Me too. I will actually trade someone my Blu-ray for Into Darkness for a copy of Beyond. Anybody? Lobster?
You know, I'm staring at our show notes, and I plugged in one of my favorite GIFs, which is
GIF is freaking me out.
Spock going bug-eyed and vomiting rainbows in Kirk's face. And I got to say, this movie is a legend of its time. This is 10 years later, and if you held up Star Trek and The Force Awakens and said, which movie do you want to watch? I will probably always go Star Trek. And that's not because I'm a Trekkie first and a Star Wars fan second. It's because I think of the let's reboot these for the 21st century. This one holds up as an original piece that, yeah, it rips off Star Wars a little bit, but not as much as The Force Awakens rips off Star Wars, even though it is Star Wars. Do you know what I mean? Right? Like this movie walks the talk. It says, we're going to give you an original series cast, and they're going to not maybe be the original series cast, but they're going to have what you love about them, and it's going to be fun, and it socks the Spock. It literally punches Spock in the face. So, you know, there are times that Spock as a character is completely infuriating, and this gives you that, but it also gives you the cool moments where you love Spock when they're like, you know, it's logical. I thought you'd like that. And he's like, no, not this time. And Zachary Quinto, for me, will always be the guy who turned live long and prosper to someone into basically saying, fuck you. He just owns that line delivery so much.
Then I guess your perfect record still stands.
Yeah. I only have one comment. Live long and prosper. So, again, just...
That gif is too much Roger Rabbit at the end with the bad guy. It's freaking me out.
Just scroll down, man. Scroll down until you're at Cult Legend. You let it on the top.
I can't look. I can't.
But again, this to me, legend of its time. So they released the soundtrack as like the complete score, and I bought that in a heartbeat. So just the entire score to the film. You know, I just...
Nerd.
I'm a total nerd for this one. It lives in my heart forever as a legend of its time. Beef, what time is it?
News time. Wait, last
Are
word on Star
in
Trek.
The wake
oh,
of
sorry,
Avengers?
Sorry.
Hang on. Last word on Star Trek.
Live.
Beyond.
Long.
And
postpone.
Prosper.
Prostitute. What?
What? Let's move on.
Okay. Beef had a really good news time, so I don't want to step on that and make him do it again. Beef, what time is it?
Should I just copy and paste the other
one?
Yeah.
Beef, what time is it? News time. Okay.
So are we still in the wake of Avengers, for Christ's sake?
We are definitely still in the wake of Avengers. Only dropped 25%, but if you're Disney, you have found a magic lamp. You have rubbed it, and it has granted you three digits in the millions for Aladdin, 112 million.
I think this is all part of the freaking, it's like they made money with movies that started to be kind of like reboots, like The Force Awakens and stuff, and then they're just like, all right, everything we have, let's redo it now.
Yeah.
Which is the first? It's Cinderella was the first one. They made the Cinderella for not that much money. It worked. And then they had the Tim Burton Alice. Yeah.
But
they just went with it.
I think the... Was it Beauty and the Beast, though, was the one? Because that ended up doing incredible box office numbers.
Beauty and the Beast, Jungle Book.
Yeah. So Aladdin, which, you know, made a lot of money, is the next one. And then they're going to have The Lion King later this summer. And then they're going to have a Maleficent movie and a Toy Story movie and Spider-Man. And, oh yeah, cap the year off with Star Wars.
Do you think The Lion King is going to be bigger than Star Wars this year?
I think The Lion King is going to be bigger than Aladdin. I'm honestly surprised they did these two in the same year. Because if I recall from my childhood, these came out like a year or two apart. And there was enough time kind of in between them that they were like, oh, Disney's going to do it again. The reviews of Aladdin have not been that astonishing, but it's certainly making money.
That's for sure. I think why they're going so fast with this, I think Bob Iger is trying to remake them all under his reign right now. And he's going away in a year and a half, something like that. He announced his retirement date, and it's going to be after Disney Plus is installed, after Star Wars is done, after the first mega phase of MCU.
Sure.
Has been done, and after all the classic have been remade, his legacy is cemented in this.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Elsewhere at the box office, Brightburn opened in fifth place. Again, I don't feel like that's disrespectable because it is a horror movie opening against Aladdin, John Wick, Avengers, and Pokemon. So, you know, it did fine. I would have liked to see this do a little bit better. I wonder if word of mouth or if it'll have legs to kind of continue on. But this is one that I kind of definitely want to see. And I don't go to horror movies very often.
We're talking Brightburn here? It's good.
Okay.
It's good. The only thing that I would say is that this is a B-level movie that's pretty good. Don't expect too much introspection.
Right.
It's not Chronicle?
Sure.
Okay.
So we talked about Pokemon last week, and when I went and saw Pokemon in the theater, right before they played the trailer to Sonic the Hedgehog, and everyone in the theater groaned because Sonic the Hedgehog looks friggin' abominable. And lo and behold, the studio has announced that they will delay the release date so they can actually do the character design correctly, because basically they know that releasing it as is box office suicide.
Yeah, that would be stupid on their part.
So this will cost them a fair bit of money because they have to go back and reanimate the character, the star of the film, through the entire movie. But I kind of feel like it'll be worth it if they can actually do it right.
Yeah, honestly, at this point, I'm pretty sure Paramount already has filed that as a loss.
Yes.
Because whatever amount of money you throw at this thing right now, it's a bomb. It's just going to be a bomb. There's anybody that you know that's interested, or everybody's more like, oh my God, what it's going to look like at the end. That's watching it on Netflix for 5 minutes when it
then,
comes
out. They should probably spend a little bit of money, try to redo it, do what they can, and then just sell it to a Netflix.
Yeah.
Right?
I think they should fix the character, release it, and then say, well, at least the character looks right. We're going to do a sequel because we fixed the way the character should look. And do it.
Yeah, so, but everybody online is just haters. People could say they don't like it, even if they... I mean, people are lame.
Yes, people suck. Speaking of blue lead characters, one fun thing that the Tick series did is they redesigned the way the character looked 3 times in 2 seasons and just shrugged it off as, oh, you look different now. Wait, are you molting? And they just had like a one-off joke about it and then moved on.
That was great.
So, I get that as you're doing characters that are video game characters or comic book characters and you're updating them to the live screen, they may not look perfect on the first go-round. Just fix it and move on.
Yeah. Agree.
Speaking of something that looks pretty damn comic book accurate, Swamp Thing... You are amazing.
It does look
looks
interesting.
Good.
I hear really good things about this show.
I remember the couple movies or the show from when I was a kid, barely. And I don't know. I mean, I'm at least intrigued a bit, you know, more than so. I'm a lot more intrigued about this than I thought I would be, considering I didn't know about it a month ago.
Yeah, and... Considering that at this point, everything that they produce for DC Universe has been pretty good. Titan has been pretty good. Young Justice Season 3 has been pretty good. I mean, so these streaming service kind of understand after Star Trek and CBS that if you're able to give like enough quality programming for to give a reason just to keep it every month... They threw a bunch of money at it. I know they cut Swamp Thing to 10 episodes because of budget, so they must be doing something right somewhere. Hopefully.
Another comic book series that's actually wrapping up. This will be the final season of Legion.
God, that show's good.
I still haven't seen the second season.
God, that show's good. That's all I have to say. It's great.
This looks awesome. I haven't watched season 2 yet either, and I need to get caught up so I can watch what looks like an awesome trip for season 3. Speaking of shows that I'm a little bit behind on, but I feel like it doesn't matter because Archer 99 looks like a must watch for us.
Absolutely. We might have to do like a two-part episode once it's all out, you know, first half, second half, like way back in the days of Legends.
Oh my God, I'm like 5 seasons
late. Dude, this doesn't matter.
This is like they're just reinventing themselves every season.
Oh, that's true.
And they're just playing off all of the...
In their personal relationships.
And tropes and movie jokes and things like that. Like this looks like it has Aliens and Thor Ragnarok and all kinds of...
They said 2001.
It looks just awesome. Jessica Jones Season 3, also the final season coming down the pike.
You're confirming what I've always said. Netflix will throw 2-3 seasons at you for anything.
Well, they were canceled because of the Disney thing.
Yeah, but
sure.
This trailer... Sorry. Oh, God. This trailer doesn't give us much to go on, but I'll watch it either way. Like, doesn't matter. And I don't normally throw these CBS show trailers in, but I love Walton Goggins.
I'm in here for this.
And this looks just like a lot of fun, based really on the strength of his acting and being someone fun to watch. It's called The Unicorn. It's about a widower who's raising two daughters, getting back into the dating scene, kind of a fun dramedy type
I don't
deal.
See him in a lot of a comedy or
no,
dramedy.
No, usually he's a crazy person, right?
Right, like, and this looks awesome. I mean, I'm putting him next to the dude from Justified, and I'm like, okay, I could see him fumbling around raising two daughters and being oblivious to the women around him.
Right. So this looks fun. It might be the rare network TV show that I will actually watch. And then one movie trailer for the week, The Art of Racing in the Rain. It's a dog movie.
Goddess.
It is a dog movie. So pack the tissues, I think. From the producers of Marley and Me.
Being a dog owner, and you are
now
too.
Now I am, yeah.
It's so easy to pull on these yep. strings. Because as soon as you've went through your first crisis with these animals, you feel like really attached to these.
Even
so I'm
before,
watching this
yeah.
and I'm like, I'm not interested in that movie whatsoever. I find the concept cheesy and overdone and written as fuck. But I'm watching the trailer and I'm like, who's gonna die? The dog owner.
Dog's a good boy. The owner's a good boy.
I know. And I'm like, oh, the fuck am I invested? They've invest me with their freaking dog yep. in the trailer.
Yep. Yeah, you fucking sissies. That's why you get a cat and you don't care.
Yeah.
No, they still pulled up my heartstrings too. And it's annoying.
You say that cat you don't care, but when your old cat.
Oh, no, I know. Don't worry.
You're going to be a mess.
Yeah. No shit.
You guys need to check me because I skipped over a whole... We only have two news stories and I skipped over one of them.
That's fine.
But the second news story is kind of non-news.
Yeah.
So,
speaking
we'll do that
of,
at the end.
Speaking of dogs that need to get taken out and put down, Kelsey Grammer... Kelsey Grammer has revealed that there are six different ideas in contention for the reboot of Frasier. So
who
we
gives a shit? It's different cities he went to.
Yeah,
or...
yeah.
But think about it. Any project that's developed is gonna throw this at a bunch of writers.
Yep.
Which are all going to come with their own ideas.
And if they pick the six best out of 4,000, I mean...
Exactly. And I think right now, paparazzi and people are dying for clicks. And they're like, oh, at some point they were like, oh, there's like seven Harley Quinn movie in development. I was like, of course. Before you make one, you ask a bunch of different people to... True ideas on paper. That's what development means. Well, you can work on develop so many movies that never happen.
And there's so many fans kind of invested in these things that you can go on Twitter and pick out 30 different ideas for Frasier reboots, right? And you can go,
right.
Okay, well, these are kind of similar to ideas that we had, so, you know, here's what the people want.
Yeah, and who wrote it the best? Oh, okay, we like the style of this guy instead of that other guy. And they wrote mostly
the same. Yeah.
They add the same synopsis to go from.
I think the biggest thing is that they had 264 freaking episodes.
So it was a big show.
That was a good show.
Very good show.
And I think sitcoms were huge in the 90s. Yep. That was like the Friends, Seinfeld, yep. Frasier. You...
Like mad Thursday night
we were mad about you, sitcoms. We were mad about you.
You're so bad, dude.
Family Matters.
So that's why I was saying that this is kind of non-news to me.
Full House
of
sitcoms.
Oh, dear God.
Okay. I feel like that's a good place to close.
Next time, Legends Podcast. The Mummy, Legends of 99.
Do not read from
the
book.
I think the date is important for that
Do
one.
Do not read from the book.
I haven't seen it in so long. You're ruining stuff. Stop it. This has been episode 424 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, yay, movies I thought were really good. Let's see where it goes.
I'm Wing saying, if we find an old book, don't read it out loud.
and I'm John Lobster saying, do not read from the book. I told you, if I told you once, I told you 1,000 times, you will awaken an undead curse upon this land if you read from the book.
Okay, let's read from the book.
Hey, what's this book say? I don't know. Let's pronounce it in this ancient dead language out loud. Hum nom shabab, hum nom shabab, kalima, kalima.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit legendspodcast.lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, Gunna Geek, or KrakenCast. No infringement is intended.